Welcome to Extreme Genes, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
And welcome to America's Family History Show, Extreme Genes and ExtremeGenes.com. I am Fisher, your radio root sleuth, on the program where we shake your family tree and watch the nuts fall out. Our guest today, very excited to have David Imbrogno on. He's an Ohio man, recently took a trip to Italy and actually visited the house that his dad was born in 1921. All boarded up, but he was still able to get in there. And you won't believe how he got into some parts of the house. We'll have that coming up for you in about 8 minutes or so. And just a reminder also, make sure you get signed up for our weekly Genie newsletter. It is absolutely free. We give you all kinds of stories there. I link you to those and also other great interviews we've had on past shows of Extreme Genes and a column from me each week. We'd love to have you as part of our weekly Genie community. It's easy to do. Just go to ExtremeGenes.com and you'll find the sign up box right there in the upper right hand corner of our homepage. But right now, let's head out to Boston and my good friend, the chief genealogist of the New England Historic Genealogical Society and AmericanAncestors.org. It is David Allen Lambert. How are you, David?
I'm doing great, Fish. We're out in Beantown getting ready for Christmas this week, and everybody's hustling and bustling in the streets of Boston.
Yes, sir. And we got a lot of things to talk about, too, as we get ready for all kinds of cultural and family experiences that all kind of tie into creating new family memories, right?
Well, that's true. And so what are you planning for dinner this holiday?
You know, I don't plan the dinners in my house. We're a very traditional household. It is all planned by the women folk, and they do a great job.
Well, I'm going to send your wife a couple of suggestions you might want to try. And, well, it may change the amount of people that go to your dinner table. Sarah Lohman just wrote a book called Eight Flavors, The Untold Story of American Cuisine. Have you ever tried a cake made by Martha Washington?
No. Is there something different about it?
Well, the thing about it, it's a little different. It doesn't have as much flour as it does black pepper.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so her black pepper cake by Martha Washington, I'm sure, is not very popular with current first ladies, but it couldn't be any more unpopular than something that this author tried, which is called stewed moose face.
That's a picture,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, exactly what it sounds like.
Yes.
She ended up spending an afternoon in her kitchen in Queens, New York, taking a moose face brought in from Alaska, scalding the face in hot water to remove the fur. Well, you know what a wet dog smells like?
Oh.
Wet moose is not nice.
No. Not good.
But at the end of the day, the people she invited ate it. But at the end, they went and ordered takeout pizza.
Yes, I would too. Probably first.
The next story is a really touching one, and it comes out from Pennsylvania, where three soldiers from the Massachusetts 54th Regiment were reburied. You may remember the 54th if you saw the movie back in the 80s with Matthew Broderick,
yes,
and Morgan Freeman, Glory.
Yes.
This is the African-American unit that was raised, and these gentlemen were buried in a private cemetery on private property during the war, and they were now laid to honor in a cemetery with other veterans. I think it's wonderful. So Greenbury Stanton, William Anderson, and John Nelson were remembered well over 150 years after they passed away.
What a great story.
The one thing that really touches me when we go back and we talk to our older relatives and get stories, and the survivors of the Holocaust are writing their stories down, you know, these heart-wrenching stories, and sharing them with future generations by putting them out on social media. One of the things that they're creating are called a legacy letter, which allows them to impart the values and advice to the next generation, almost like a time capsule of advice. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we had that from our great-grandparents that they wrote down? By the way, when you read this 100 years from now, keep in mind that the best thing in life to do is blank.
Isn't that great? What a great idea. Legacy letters.
I instill this idea to everybody else. So, you know, it's kind of like a tip. Why not write one ourselves?
Exactly.
You know, for our descendants.
And that's from the New York Times. We have a link to that story at ExtremeGenes.com. So check it out.
Well, one of the things I would like to say is that tips are something I love to give out. And here's one that's generic that I give out all the time, and I hope that our listeners like it. If you have ancestors, say, upstate New York or somewhere in the Midwest, and you've never been there before, you can't find the records online. They haven't been microfilmed or digitized or whatever the case might be. Where do you want to go to get research done? Well, you can get in the car and go. But I suggest before you go, find out who the genealogist in the town is. Now, when you've done this, Fish, you know, a lot of times we'll go out and we'll go to the Historical Society and they're not open.
Yep.
But I find sometimes the historical societies, and no offense, are more interested in that old schoolhouse or the fire pumper they have and may not be genealogists. And we're a special breed. So here's my tip. Call the public library that may deal with the community of interest or a regional library that deals with multiple communities and say, when you get a reference question on genealogy, who do you turn to? Who's the person you pull out of your Rolodex and ask for that contact? You'll probably get Mabel Saunders, who's 85 years old, who's collecting every obituary since she was 12 years old and putting scrapbooks together. This week on AmericanAncestors.org, I'm going to do a little different. Many of our listeners who I've met at conferences have said that they wanted to go on some of the research trips that I go on. So here's my invite to them. For 2017, I invite you to join AmericanAncestors.org on the road. From March 5th to 12th, we'll be in Washington, D.C., where we'll be visiting the National Archives, the DAR Library, the Library of Congress. If you want to go international with me, I'm going to be in Scotland and Edinburgh doing research in the Highlands there on June 18th to June 25th. And then to the greatest collection of microfilm and genealogical research you can get in one place, right there in Salt Lake City, Utah, the Family History Library. We'll have a tour to Salt Lake November 5th to 12th. Merry Christmas, my friend, to you and yours.
You too, my friend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
David Allen Lambert from Boston. All right, coming up next, I'll talk to an Ohio man who went back to his father's birthhouse in Italy, and you won't believe some of the experiences he had. Coming up next on Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. Fisher here, the radio root sleuth, and part of my sleuthing often has to do with finding stories that I think you're going to be interested in, and this one just is absolutely incredible. And in large part because of the fact that they created a website around an amazing trip to Italy. And on the line with me right now from the area of Lebanon, Ohio, it's David Imbrogno. How are you, David? Welcome to the show.
I'm very good. Glad to be here.
How did you guys get started in family history? Because I know it wasn't just you. It was other family members as well.
Well, I'm part of the generation that had a foot in both worlds, the old world and the new. My father was born in Italy, came across with my grandparents, and so we had that firsthand exposure to the old country and the folks that came over, as well as the modern life here in the U.S. We were all always curious. When we were young, I think we took it for granted, but as we got older, we realized, geez, you know, if we don't look into this and record it and such, it's going to be gone soon. So my aunt started doing genealogy. My brother and I just started recording stories. He's a journalist. I'm a photographer. And eventually we decided, this is great, but we got to go to the place where it all came from.
Wow. And so did you get to interview Dad before he passed?
Yeah, we interviewed and photographed everybody we could. I don't think we missed anyone. Perhaps my grandfather a little bit, but I have lots of photographs. But he passed before we had all the fancy digital recording equipment.
But what fun, though, that you can pass this all down to the next generation and they can really participate in the culture of it all. So you went to Italy and you knew, of course, where they were from. Did you know that you had family over there living now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because my grandmother had gone over before she passed. My uncle, who lives up in Ontario, goes there regularly. And we knew there were some there, but holy moly, we arrived and stayed with, I think it's my grandmother's niece or something like that. But word spread, there was a knock at the door and more people and another knock and more people. Pretty soon there wasn't any room in the apartment, so we moved to somebody's house. More people showed up, and we ended up, one of them owned a restaurant, a pizzeria, and we had to go there because of all the people that came to see us that were family. Everybody, including an older man that had babysat my father.
No. Wow.
Yeah, I was like, I mean, there's just like one miracle after another on this trip.
And the stories are always that they feed you until you just about explode. Did you gain weight on this trip?
I have no comment.
Well, talk a little about the exploration around the home where your father was born. Now, what year was he born, first of all?
He was born in 1921, I think it was.
Okay.
And they came over in 29. There were three homes, actually. There was the home where my grandmother was born, the home where my grandfather lived, and even the home of my great-grandfather.
Wow.
So it went back three generations.
And they're still all in the family?
Well, no, they're not. Most folks in Italy have to rent, at least in that part of Italy. It's owned by a businessman. One of my cousins has been trying to buy the property but hasn't had much luck. But all three homes were standing and available for us to explore. You know, I've been to China right after Tiananmen Square, been to on museum expeditions when I worked for a museum of natural history to the Philippines. I've spent a lot of time in India. I was in Pakistan working on establishing cultural relations 6 months before 9/11. I've been all over the world, and I thought, a trip to Italy, see where my dad was born, might be fun. But it just knocked me flat. I can't even explain it. I'm a photographer. My brother's a journalist. We had two Italian aunts with us. That helped a lot with speaking and such. And we switched roles. My brother couldn't write. I couldn't photograph. And suddenly I was writing and he was photographing. And because our traditional means of expression were just insufficient to what we experienced.
We'll talk about the key. Now, you're walking along, what is it, a field outside of the house where your father was born, what, 90-some-odd years ago now, and you feel something under your feet.
Yeah. We were just feeling pretty overwhelmed. We'd been through the house where my grandmother lived and looking at the house where my father and grandfather lived, and I was just kind of kicking around in the dirt and just taking it all in, and I felt something. I was kicking at it in the dirt just right in front of the house. And I reached down, and there was this great big 6-inch long key, half rusted away.
Wow.
And I thought, that's nice. And then I looked, and the door had a keyhole that looked like it fit the key. And sure enough, it did. It was a key to the door in the bottom of the house. It was just, I practically fell to my knees. Like, oh my gosh.
Wow. And so this allowed you to go down to the basement. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been able to get there?
Probably not. We were able to get into the upstairs. The house was abandoned. But we probably wouldn't have been able to get down into the basement where the wine cellar was, the winemaking and the wine storage and such like that. Now, I took the key when I brought it back. I took some scraping of the metal off of it, and I had a friend of mine make some duplicates of it, including some of the original metal. I made enough for my kids and all my grandkids and gave them to my kids, a copy of the key with photographs of the house. And each of my grandkids will get a copy of the key when they are old enough to have their own household, their own house in a stable situation that way.
What a great idea. So the house had been abandoned. Was it abandoned when your father's family took them to the United States?
No, they left for all the reasons, political, economic, and otherwise, that most immigrants from Italy did. I think the reason the two were abandoned was the earthquakes finally got to them. There's a lot of earthquakes over there.
Wow.
And eventually they just got to, you can see where the houses have been, you know, with poles and things stabilized after previous earthquakes. But finally, I think it just got too much and the houses weren't safe to live in anymore.
Now, I don't think we've even mentioned what town we're talking about here.
It's near Cosenza, Calabria, near the city of Cosenza, but out in the countryside. Down near the bottom of Italy, kind of around the ankle.
At the ankle towards the boot. Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned there were three houses, and I remember seeing a picture of one of them where there was a coat hanging on the wall. Now, whose house was that one?
That was the house where my grandmother lived in the Naples. It looks almost exactly like an Andrew Wyeth painting I saw of a coat on a wall. In fact, I posted on my Facebook page a picture of the two coats side by side. It was just old, and I probably would have fallen apart if I touched it, and I'm kicking myself because I didn't look in the pockets, daggone.
Yeah.
Why didn't I look in the pockets?
And all these homes were abandoned, right? I mean, the one your father was born in and then the grandmother's house, and there was one other.
Yeah, the other one was my great-grandfather's house, and it was a little bit of a shell of a house, but and it was completely surrounded with brambles, and we had to fight our way in, but boy, that one had the biggest wine cellar of all, a great big vat for mixing the grape juice, and lots of bottles, even a few barrels.
All right, if somebody was planning a trip to Italy, what advice would you give them?
It depends on why you're going. I mean, I had once before gotten the opportunity to go, and we went to Rome, and we saw all the, you've got to see the main tourist sites, and they're just so amazing, so spectacular, so much history, so much of everything, the Vatican, on and on and on. But out in the countryside, it's just an amazing world, and there's multiple worlds. It goes from way up north down south, and like each region, the southern part, the middle part, the upper part, are completely different. Just depends on what you're looking for. The Tuscan country up north is wonderful. Rome and all the touristy things, and Florence and all that. And then the south, it's kind of, in a way, it's like our south. There aren't as many things that the traditional tourists come looking for, but it's just in my opinion, the real Italy, at least as far
sure.
as our roots. Now the landscapes and the Tuscan country and all that are wonderful and in some ways even prettier than down south, but it's just a nice simplicity to it and a reality to it.
Did you find some records while you were there?
My aunts that came with us, they just collected all kinds of information on genealogy from people because they could speak the language. In our case, it was a little harder. After I wrote the story, I sat on it for almost a year, and I don't know why. I just didn't do anything with it. And then my father died, and I realized what the story was missing. It was missing a conclusion. When my father was in the process of dying, I was rushing out of the house to go to be with him, and I literally tripped over a box of roof tiles that I had brought back from Italy, from the house where he was born. And I don't know, I just, not even thinking, I grabbed a few and I took them with me. While we were with him, he held the roof tile, and that was one of the last things he was able to do physically. And then as he faded, he dropped the tile, and I put it on the shelf over top of his bed. And then he died. And I was sitting there, and I realized, almost unconsciously, by putting that roof tile up there, that he died under the same roof he was born. And that is the conclusion of the story. And somehow, deep inside, I knew it didn't have a conclusion until that happened.
Incredible. He's David Imbrogno. He's from Lebanon, Ohio, and his site is calgarage.com, and you can see some amazing pictures there of the key to the house his father was born in back in 1921. David, a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Well, coming up next, it's preservation time. We're going to talk to Tom Perry from TMCPlace.com. We have your listener emails, a question about legalities. Can somebody convert something from DVD to VHS? Why would somebody want to do that? We'll find out some of those answers. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
We have an email sent to us from Ryan Bennett in Austin, Texas. Oh, our podcast producer. How about that? Asking, hey, Tom, what can I do to take my DVDs and copy them over to my server so I can access them on my devices? Is this legal, even if I were able to do it? And is there software for it? Ryan Bennett.
Yes, Ryan, you can do this. In fact, we've talked about this quite often with the Wondershare software. It's awesome software. You can take DVDs or Blu-rays and go in and turn them to what I would recommend is MP4s. Because if you put MP4s on your server, then you're going to be able to access them from your iPhone, your iPad, you know, anything that you want, and you'll be able to watch your movies. Now, one thing that's cool about that also is if there's any specific things, if you're like a salesperson, you have like a sales training DVD that you want to be able to access on your iPad when you're going out and visiting people, Wondershare also has a way that you can convert that to a specific file that will just reside on your iPad so that you can go and make presentations right there. So that's a great way to do that too. But if it's just movies and different things that you've created, or as you talked about, some copyright things, the best way is to do MP4s, as I recommend it, and to let our listeners know the difference between a computer and a server. A server is a special computer that is designed so that you can access it with your, you know, iPad, iPhone, anything that you want, different kind of devices, and so things kind of rest on that, and then you can go and access them. A lot of people get servers that they rent from other people, but a lot of people are starting to have servers in their own home so they can get whatever they want. They can have any room in their home, any television in their home, can access their server to watch their movies. So once you've converted these to MP4, there's nothing illegal about that as long as you don't resell your DVDs or give anybody access out of your immediate household to your server. So if you take these DVDs and sell them thinking, oh, I don't need them anymore, then you're in major copyright infringement. If you give your neighbors access to it, or your uncle, or your friends, your cousins, or things like that, then you're going to run into major copyright problems. But if it's for use in your household, in use on your devices that you're not loaning or giving to somebody else, there should not be any copyright issues at all. And I like MP4s again. They're extremely good quality, but they're only about half the size of a normal DVD. So you can get a lot of them on there and you can download them very easily.
I was really hoping that you were going to give him some advice that would make him think he's already going to jail. But all right, let's move on. Now, this comes from Richard Bonaducci with Western Governors University. And he says, Tom, WGU is looking to convert at least 10 VHS tapes to a digital format, not DVD necessarily, but to a digital file. Please let us know what kind of price quote and timetable we should expect.
That's a really good question. We have a lot of people that are trying to get into digital files. And like we've talked about on the show before, you need to find out what your end game is. Do you really need to go to a digital file? Is a DVD going to work for you? Why do you want a digital file? Why do you want a DVD? And when you know the answers to that, we can better help you. Now, one thing, going straight to a DVD is usually less expensive because it takes less labor. About anything you're doing nowadays with computers or any kind of devices, it's your labor that you're paying for that's the most expensive commodity, and it's just going up, 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 up while electronics are coming down. So if you want to go to the most inexpensive route, you always want to go with DVD, whether it's us or anybody out there that are other duplication and transfer houses. They can usually do DVDs less because they can do a whole bunch at the same time. Or when they're going from a VHS to a digital file, they've got to go through a translator. They've got to put it on the computer. They've got to go back into the computer, turn it into an MP4, an AVI, an MOV, whatever format you want, which is going to install more labor involved in it. Across the country, you're generally going to spend approximately about $30 to convert any kind of a tape to a digital format. If you're going just straight to DVD, some of them have a discount, and that's what you're going to expect to pay. So basically $25 to $30 to be able to convert those.
All right. So what do we have coming up next?
In the next segment, we're going to talk about going back to the future.
All right. You know, I think we're saving a lot of people from trouble, Tom.
Oh, yeah.
As we do this, we've got another question here. This is from Kathy, and she said, I'd like to have the Young Messiah movie on a Blu-ray DVD transferred to my old VHS tape because that's the only kind of player I have. Can you do this?
We can.
But?
However.
Yes.
Blu-ray players are pretty inexpensive nowadays. I see them, you know, about a month ago when they had Black Friday. They were $50. I've seen them on Amazon really inexpensively. You can buy used ones really inexpensive too. If that's totally out of the question, you can't get a Blu-ray player. Yeah, we can turn anything back to a VHS. In fact, it's kind of funny that you mentioned that. We have some older clients that refuse to go digital. They don't want a DVD player. They want a Blu-ray player. They like their VHS machine flashing 12 o'clock at them all the time, and they're happy with it. And so, yeah, we can do that. It usually runs about the same price. Now, one thing back to the Blu-ray, DVD, all this kind of stuff, there's no reason to keep a DVD player now that Blu-ray players are out there. It's not like the old days when they had VHS and Hi-8 and VHS-Cs and mini-DVs that were all cross-contamination, so to speak. Well, now with the Blu-ray players, the good quality Blu-ray players, you can play DVDs actually better than your old DVD player. So if you have like a Disney DVD that it looks great and everything's fine, you put it in a Blu-ray player that does up conversion, and it's going to make everything look better. So Snow White's going to look whiter. The dwarfs are going to look more dwarfy. Everything's going to be better. It's going to be awesome. And one thing you want to make sure, too, if your new television or the television that you're using right now has what they call an HDMI input on it, any Blu-ray player will work. If you haven't upgraded your television right now and you're not interested in doing that, make sure when you buy a Blu-ray player that it has a composite plugs on the back of it. Those are the little round ones. One is red, one is white, and one is yellow. So if your television has that and does not have an HDMI, make sure the Blu-ray player that you get has those. Some do and some don't. Sony makes great Blu-ray players because they're the ones that basically invented the format. It was them and Warner Brothers in the beginning. So Sony's are always good. I use Samsungs. I sell Samsungs. I really like them. I've never had a problem. But the most important thing you want to remember is that you have the right TV to match the right player. As I mentioned, if you have a newer flat screen, I guarantee it's going to take HDMI.
All right. Both of these questions, though, the one we had earlier from Ryan and this one from Kathy, still touch on that question of the legality of copying a copyrighted piece. It's okay when?
It's okay if it's only for your use and it's a convenience thing. If you have a VHS tape and you want to make another VHS tape of it that's like a Disney movie, that's totally illegal. You cannot do that. In the Fair Use Act, there's kind of a convenience clause in there that will allow you to change it from VHS to DVD or backwards, either one. And now remember, I'm not an attorney. I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on the radio or on television. So if you want to check, talk to an attorney to find out for sure. But the way I understand the law is it's the Fair Use Act, which is a convenience thing. You're just making a VHS into a DVD so that you can play it on your DVD player because your VHS player doesn't work anymore.
But you can't do it making copies for each of your kids and sharing them throughout the country or whatever it may be.
Exactly. And a lot of people try doing that, especially with music. They try to make a compilation CD and say, it's my property. I can make copies for my kids. They may be your kids, but you can't make copies for them unless you get a hold of the Harry Fox agency and get permission.
All right. Thanks so much, Tom. Good advice. Let's save our listeners a lot of trouble moving forward with that and they don't get hung up.
Exactly. You want the FCC knocking on your door.
Ooh, or anybody else. All right. Thanks so much. And if you have a question for Tom Perry, you can always email him at asktom@tmcplace.com. Well, thanks so much to David Imbrogno from the Lebanon, Ohio area for talking to us about his incredible Italy trip and finding the key to the locked up old house his dad was born in. A lot of components to that story. Take care. We'll talk to you next week. And remember, as far as everyone knows, we're a nice, normal family.